Samkhya, seeing, Ekanta Bhutani, detached, Bhutani, the living entities, Ado, in the beginning, Prajapati, Lord Brahma, Striyam, the woman, Chakre, created, Swadeha, of his body, Ardham, half, Yaya, by whom, Pumsam, of man, Mati, the mind, Rita, carried away. Translation. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma, the father of the living entities of the universe, saw that all the living entities were unattached. To increase population, he then created woman from the better half of man's body. For woman's behavior carries a man's mind. Purport. This entire universe is going on under the spell of sexual attachment, which was created by Lord Brahma to increase the population of the entire universe, not only in human society, but also in other species. As stated by Rishabhdev in the fifth canto, Pumsastriya Mituni Bhavam Etam, the entire world is going on under the spell of sexual attraction between man and woman. When man and woman unite, the hard knot of this attraction becomes increasingly tight, and thus man is implicated in a materialistic way of life. This is the illusion of the material world, the illusion acted upon Kasyapa Muni, although he was very learned and advanced in spiritual knowledge, as stated in Manu Samhita 2.2.1.5 and Srimad Bhagavatam 9.19.17. Matra swasa dui trava na vivikta sanu bhavit balavan indriyan gramovidvam samapikarasati. A man should not associate with a woman in a solitary place, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that they lead astray even a person advanced in knowledge. When a man remains in a solitary place with a woman, his sexual desire undoubtedly increases. Therefore, the words ekanta bhutani, which are used here, indicate that to avoid sexual desires, one should avoid the company of women as far as possible. Sexual desire is so powerful that one is saturated with it if he stays in a solitary place with any woman, even his mother, sister, or daughter. Kasyapa came under the control of lusty desires by the association of Diti, who was afflicted by lust. And because this attraction between male and female is inherent in nature and very strong, therefore it is mentioned it was not surprising that Kasyapa, although he was a great elevated sage and learned in scripture, that nonetheless he became deviated from the principles of Dharma. So here, then in verse 30, we find how this is part of the creation. And how in the beginning of times, in order to populate the universe, the Prajapatis were created, the mental sons of Lord Brahma, but they were not really populating the universe until woman was created. And then once that attraction, male-female attraction, was there, then the increase of population gradually carried on nicely. And and here we are with the very strong sexual energy that is pushing the living being throughout life. and even in old age can remain very, very strong and what to do. It is possible through a transcendental process to rise above this sexual desire, but it is the all overpowering energy in the entire universe. Srila Prabhupada explains that all the 8,400,000 species of life are afflicted by sex desire. Think about that. Even the germs, somehow or other, are afflicted by sex desire. So, it is a very mighty opponent. And we are boldly taking vows for life, including no illicit sex. Good luck. that's quite a declaration of war, and not easy at all. By constantly taking shelter, it is that constantly taking shelter one can overcome this material energy. It is through Krishna's mercy that we can rise above the material energy, and mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prabhajante. It is through Krishna's mercy that we can rise above this influence of maya, and without it not. And it takes that constant surrender. We see devotees constantly chanting, at least the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even between bites, they are chanting while eating. So constantly chanting Kirtaniya Sadahari is indeed the goal. Always engaged in devotional service. Not a moment not engaged in devotional service. So it sounds, in a sense, a very rigid process. And for the materialist, this Krishna consciousness appears very artificial. If you need to constantly be engaged in devotional service, and otherwise you fall down. Seems very artificial. But that's not a fact. The fact is that when that is only artificial for one whose original love for Krishna has been covered. It is explained that avritam jnanam etena yoginam nityavairina kamarupena kunteya duspurena nalena cha. That one's knowledge of the truth becomes covered, avritam jnanam etena. And then, due to the influence of lust, yes, then one is in the grip of that lust and distracted from remembering the Supreme Lord. But one who is engaged in devotional service and whose love for Krishna is awakened, for that person, it's not that there is too much time in devotional service. There's not enough. There's not enough. Rupa Goswami is praying for millions of ears and millions of tongues to chant, and still it's not enough. For the gopis, even blinking the eyelids is too much. Right? A moment lost, a moment not seeing Krishna. This creator has made these useless eyes. What kind of creation is that? So at that time, avyartakalatvam, at that time, every moment is naturally used with eagerness in service to Krishna. And that is what Krishna consciousness is all about. To serve Krishna with a great desire every moment. And until we are there, we are engaging in sadhana bhakti. We're engaging in devotional service in practice. And sadhana bhakti is, to an extent, difficult, especially then vaidhi bhakti, engaging in devotional service according to rules and regulations. That is a stage where in devotional service one may struggle And it is at that stage, mantra swasa dui treva, navivikta sano bhavit balavan indriyan gramo vidvam samapikarsati. As it says in the translation of that verse from Bhagavatam, ninth canto, a man should not associate with a woman in a solitary place, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that they even lead astray, that they lead astray even a person advanced in knowledge. But Srila Prabhupada went to the Morning Star Range in California, where people were walking around naked, which is somewhat unorthodox for a sannyasi. It goes beyond crossing the ocean. You know, it says, right, one should not cross the ocean. I mean, he crossed the ocean, that was one thing. But see what came of it, you know. And then this whole commune, and people naked, men and women. And at one point, Prabhupada arrived and saw this naked man working in the garden, wound down the window, and said to the man, "What are you doing?" He said, "Growing potatoes." Prabhupada said, "No, what are you doing with your life?" So he went head on and even had kirtan with them, with the naked men and women. Okay. But Prabhupada was not affected by any material desire. Maybe compared to Sukadev Goswami, who coming out of the womb at age 16 in full bloom of youth, didn't take the time to dress or anything, just left home and walked through the forest where it happened to be so that these young girls were taking bath and not dressed. And when they saw him, they could see that there was complete innocence in him. No thought of any sexuality whatsoever was there in his consciousness. Therefore, the girls didn't even bother to cover themselves. We can imagine that Srila Prabhupada had that kind of absorption in service to Krishna, and that kind of absorption in delivering the conditioned souls that he had no other thoughts. We may be also dedicated to the Sankirtan movement, but yet in the back of our mind there may be some appreciation for bodily features at times. And if that is the case, we better adhere to principles of restraint in mixing between men and women. And that is the case. So therefore, we have all these kind of regulators, principles, all kinds of warnings about not sitting in secluded places as members of the opposite sex, because only too many times we heard, "I don't know how it happened," right? Yes. Too many times I don't know how it happened dynamics happened. And they will happen again and again and again. And that's just, it just happened. Yes, it just happens. So It Happens. Rindasarup had a blog called So It Happens. Indeed, So It Happens. So we have to be on guard. One can, even if transcendental, one can never consider himself transcendental. That is one of the principles that we follow in spiritual life. Not thinking that we are above it, even when we are above it, and still therefore taking shelter of certain regulative principles. But within reason, not with lots of fanaticism, but in a reasonable way. The Vedic culture was a very different culture than the European culture. The European culture, which from Europe went all over the world due to colonialism, is the European culture is found in Australia, in America, and in Europe. And, of course, it lived its own life in these around the world. But it's the same European culture, where there is a much more... first of all, there is impersonalism. Srila Prabhupada taught that his mission was Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani, Pracharine, Nirvisesha, Sunyavadi, Paschacha, Desatarine, to deliver the Western country, the Paschacha Desh, from impersonalism. So part of this impersonalism in the Western world is an insensitivity to other living beings. Whereas the Vedic culture was very different. Even the Indian culture today, which is a dim reflection of the Vedic culture, knows much more brotherhood than the European culture, which is cold and impersonal. India is like one big family. We can very much see like that, yeah, that spirit. So if for a moment we look at the psychology of Vedic culture, then we see the brahmacharis would go door to door begging. And that's what these heartless gurus used to do, send out these young boys, you know, not even 10 years old, should be already begging door to door. But it wasn't so bad because the doors were opened by mothers, right, who were immediately seeing, you know, see this little boy like my son, and see this lady like my mother. So kind of quite personal exchanges, not like some stranger, some beggar is coming to my door, bang, slam the door, get out of here before we call the police. Don't you see the dogs will bite? Right? How dare you set your dirty foot in my garden? kind of approach, which I personally experienced in Australia when I was going door to door with books, and where I rang the doorbell, and as soon as the door opened, this lady with bright red hair started like barking at me, "Get up! Get up! Get up!" And I sort of looked over my shoulder because I thought possibly a dog might have wandered behind me into the garden, because you couldn't really speak to a human being like that, right? I looked, and there was no dog. I looked back at her, and she said, "Yes, you, get out!" And I said, all right, lady, just cool it, you know. Cool it. I'm going. Don't worry. But it was amazing because she didn't know what I came for. Maybe I came to bring a check, you know, for the lottery that they won or something like that, you know. Who knows? Gosh, you know, such rude behavior. that is alien to Vedic culture. In Vedic culture, there is this principle where one accepts a person coming to the house as a representative of the Supreme Lord. And thus, he must be, whoever it is, must be given all facility. And even when one's enemy comes to the house, and you even know the guy, and he's your enemy, one should treat him in such a way that he forgets. So, a very different culture. So, in this way, I wanted to highlight that because sometimes when you get these kind of verses, there appears to be a certain amount of harshness in the verses. That a man should not associate with a woman in a solitary place seems to be harsh, a little sexist, possibly, and so on. So But Vedic culture is not harsh at all. Very different. Vedic culture is very accommodating, and a culture which is really considering that every living being is praja, that whatever has taken birth is to be protected. And protected means to be provided for, to be cared for. So there is no question of singling out anyone, but Vedic culture is calling for protection. Now in this case, it is Diti, Diti who was provoking the situation with Kasyapa. It was Diti who had given in to her lower nature. So again, that's not to be taken as, why singling out the women? There are plenty of men who are giving in to their lower nature. Right? But Bhagavatam is a scripture which is known as Amalam Puranam. It is the spotless Purana. So like that, we cannot find fault with Bhagavatam. It's not possible. As soon as we begin to find fault with Bhagavatam, then we are at fault. So whatever the Bhagavatam highlights, that we have to look at and sort of apply it and consider that there are warnings in the Bhagavatam. Warnings about weakness. The Bhagavatam is basically the story of the Bhagavad, the story of the descriptions about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Bhagavatam is also the story of how to remain fixed in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And whenever the Bhagavatam highlights some weakness, one can look at it in different ways. One way, one can look at it like the subjective observer and say, now look at that Diti. Look at that Bhagavatam. Or one can rather look at that Diti is a prototype, that Diti has many characteristics which possibly might also exist in us. And in that way, one can become introspective to the Bhagavatam. So this is definitely one way of reading Bhagavatam, an engaged reading with Bhagavatam, an introspective way of reading the Bhagavatam, which is very helpful because it highlights weakness in us. When we say kiratu hinandra palinda pulkasa abira samya kasadaya, when we are getting a long list of different people around the world, including the Kiratas, the Africans, and the Hunas, the Europeans, and so many others, right? Then we can understand that those who have taken shelter of sinful ways of life. Okay, that's us. And that can be purified. Sujanti tasmai prabhavishnave namaha. By surrender to the Supreme Lord, by devotional service, that can be purified. But we see in the behavior of Sanatan Goswami and of Haridas Thakur, when they were in Jagannath Puri and they met with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, at one point Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates were seated on a raised platform taking prasadam, and they invited Haridas and Sanatan Goswami to sit with them. But he says, no, we are following. Haridas, when first coming to Puri to meet the Lord, was with the devotees, and all the devotees came to meet the Lord. And then, suddenly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw all the devotees, welcomed them, addressed different ones by name, and then he said, where's Haridas? And then everyone said, hey, where's Haridas? He was just here. Where did he go? And they went looking for Haridas, and they found him at a distance, lying on the road, flat, paying obeisances. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was staying near to the Jagannath Mandir, and Haridas said, I cannot go there. I am too fallen. I am from a low birth. I am not qualified to go near there. Haridas never said, well, I'm transcendental now. I have, you know, I have nothing to do with who I was. No, I'm completely transcendental. So, in that respect, the Netherlands also are known as the lowest, it's about the lowest country on the planet, right? It's below sea level, in case someone didn't know. The city hall in Amsterdam has a glass tube in it, which is connected to the seawater. And it's always above, the water level in the tube is always way above the floor, sometimes 2 meters, sometimes more. Yeah. So this proves it. The lowest birth. Belgium is better. More pious, what to say. So, we can never assume that we are beyond it, above it, just to be safe. And that's one thing that Bhagavatam is calling for when showing how people fell prey to the lower nature. Jagannanda Pandit says, Krishna bahir mukahaya bhogavan chakara nikitistamaya tara japati ahaya. I like that verse because it's a verse that doesn't deal with fall down. It's a verse where Jagadananda Pandit says that basically that one should be careful in involving himself with the external energy, because not that one will fall down, he says, Maya will slap you down. And I like that point, that Maya slaps us down. We take it to the edge, sort of, and flirt a little bit with the material energy, just a little sense gratification. You know, you can't be fanatic, you know. I mean, here we are human after all. And Maya says, yes, come a little closer to the edge, and then bang, she slaps us down. And I thought that's, I took note of that statement of Jagadananda. I thought it was kind of, again, another warning to be careful. Srila Prabhupada also said, one of the problems I see in my Western disciples is that they do not have sufficient fear of Maya. So Bhagavatam is certainly raising a certain amount of fear of Maya. And I think here in this particular section, describing how the situation with Diti and Kasyapa got out of hand, that is certainly a warning for us that we should be careful and take shelter seriously of Krishna. So with that, I'm sort of came back to the point where I started, because the first thing I said was to take shelter of Krishna all the time. And sort of I found when a lecture comes to a circle and comes to the point where you started, then you should stop and ask for questions. Otherwise, you're just going to repeat yourself. So any questions? Yes. What is the difference between Maya and Kali? Maya is the presiding deity of the material energy, and all that material energy is within her realm, and that is Maya. Kali is described in the Mahabharata. We find it in the story of King Nala and Damayanti. We find an interesting description about the residence of Kali. That Kali is actually described there as the lowest of the celestials, but that he resides in the celestial regions, along with his colleague Dwapara and some of his other colleagues there from the other yugas, and they are residing there. And that's where Kali is when it's not his yuga. And Kali basically waits there. Then Kali is in his yuga. He, of course, gets a domain, right? And that domain includes planet Earth, but his domain is not the celestial regions. It says the celestial regions, it never goes below Treta Yuga. See, the Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam. So Kali is an agent of the Lord, who is acting in this particular way, and Kali is you could say an assistant of Maya. Yeah, he's like so. His although he's very powerful, Maya is like the superintendent of the entire material world, and Kali governs only a small portion thereof. Like that. That's the difference. Other question. Sham.
Maharaj, sometimes when Prabhupada referred to the Krishna's Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments.
You mentioned, like,
I don't know much about
kill and thou shalt commit adultery.
I see.
And you make the comment to say, just see the conscience of the people that he was preaching to.
Uh-huh.
But this Bhagavatam verse seems much heavier.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
So, how do you see that?
That statement, and I guess everyone heard it because your theatrical voice is loud enough for the crowd. No, it's saying I don't need to repeat, is it? You all heard, yes. Or for the internet, I need to repeat it. Mike
is quite good.
Mike is quite good. Good, that settles that. Yeah, well, that is the kind of that's an your question is, or your line of reasoning, which is kind of not your personal line of reasoning, but really trying to enter into how one might think, right? Looking at what Prabhupada said about the Ten Commandments and how it's for a low class type of people, and now looking at this, one might argue this is even much stronger. This is a typical case where we take one statement of the scripture, or one statement of a scripture, and highlighting that one statement without considering the context of the scripture as a whole. And this tendency is there, especially in one who is not learned, to do that and to pull out some statements of the scripture and then go like crucify the scripture on the basis of that scripture, and hang the Bhagavatam on the cross. The Bhagavatam should not be nailed on the cross. Although, in a certain tradition, they have a thing about that. But the Bhagavatam doesn't deserve to be nailed to the cross because the Bhagavatam must be looked at it in its entire context, you see. And then we see the whole richness of verses. And seeing in that context, we see that, no, it is said not for the very low. No. Not for the very uncultured. No, even for the cultured. Because underneath, underneath the layer of veneer, underneath all the civilization, underneath all that whole nice behavior, right? There is still what I found in a German bookstore, as I was reading books on the shelf, described as the inner Schweinhund or those who need a translation, the inner hog dog, right? You know. So what can I say? The inner Schweinhund is very strong and can somehow or other wants to break loose and looks for opportunities, even a minute when no one's watching. Lock the door. You know. I read this article about a particular type of foodstuff and how this person had it in the bag, you know, hidden, you know, wanting to eat the whole package, but not wanting to show it to anyone, right? You know, the lust of eating the whole packet. So waiting for the opportunity to go into hiding and then just devour it all. From time to time you catch devotees in a compromising situation like that, you know. Cheeks all stuffed. Just munching into the hidden cake or whatever it is, you know. Yeah. You see the point. So there are ample of moments that inner animal wants a little space, and also ultimately it wants to break the chains and break loose and just, you know, just go for it. Right? So therefore, we should never give that inner animal too much rope. So Vedic culture is careful about that, about the, oh, I don't know how it happened, dynamics between men and women. It warns about that. Balavan Indriyan Gramo. Knowledge is not enough, because knowledge doesn't satisfy the heart. Only love. Love is enough. When there's love for Krishna, then one cannot be affected. Srila Prabhupada's example. So let's not nail the Bhagavatam to the cross just because of the Ten Commandments. Anyone else? Okay, then we have an early end, which is good for a tired person.